The podcast with Dr. Jim Keeney at www.jim.md.
Dr. Jim here. Welcome to this episode of the podcast. If you haven't already done so, please go to the website at jim.md. That's www.jim.md. Sign up by clicking on the subscribe buttons you'll see to the right. And this way, it'll get delivered to you immediately as soon as I post a podcast. You won't miss another episode. Today, I thought we'd talk about travel and how you get prepared health-wise to travel. I get a lot of these phone calls from friends, from relatives who wants to know, okay, I'm going to Nairobi. What do I need to do? Are there immunizations or do I need to take any medicines with me? You know, how do I prepare? So let's start. I think the best place to start is the CDC website, which is www.cdc.gov/travel. All right. Now, with government websites, you know you have to put the www or it just won't work. But the CDC has the collection of all the information that used to be in these books that we had to buy as doctors, and we would pull out this big, thick book that was updated every year. As if we were some wise sage, we would tell you what vaccinations you need. Nowadays, the doctor just goes on the website for the CDC and looks it up. And that's something you can do too. You can just look up what immunizations you need, if any. Usually, most places you travel, you want to make sure that you're up to date on your regular immunizations. Things like tetanus. If you haven't had your mumps, measles, rubella shots as a child, you never got those finished, you might want to do that. Then there's kind of the adult vaccines, like pneumonia, for example. If you're an older person, have any kind of risk factors for respiratory illness, that's something you're going to want to get before you travel. And you may want to consider the meningitis vaccine. In other countries, meningitis is a lot more prevalent than it is here, especially when you're going to be packed into airports and places in big cities where you might come in contact with a lot of different people from a lot of different areas. The way to do this is just go to the CDC website. You'll see an area that says destination, and you type in your destination, it will pull up a write-up for that area and tell you everything you need to know health-wise, what the health risks are, what you need to worry about as far as foodborne illnesses and immunizations, stuff like that. Now, you're going to have to allow about 4 to 6 weeks, really the longer the better, because some of these immunizations require a series of shots that can take up to 6 weeks to get done. If you're inside that 6 week window though, don't worry, you still should go to your doctor because there are some things they can do. And even if you get the first shot in the series, you're gonna get some partial immunity and you can just finish the shot series when you get home. That way, next time you travel, you're set. You know, one immunization that's not always required, but I think is one that's kind of off the radar for most people, but I think it's a good idea if you're getting the immunizations, you should get the rabies vaccine. Bottom line is the rabies vaccine is something that we can get easily here in the U.S. voluntarily, but to get it when you're overseas is a bummer. So if you're walking through a bus station and you get bit by a stray dog, let me tell you, if you're in some foreign country, there is no way you're going to find the owner, track him down, see if he's had his rabies immunizations. So you're going to need to get a rabies vaccine. You really want to get it within the first 2 to 3 days. And you'll need to come home most likely to get it done, or you're going to spend 1 or 2 days of your trip hunting down a clinic where they can give you a rabies vaccine. So it's just easier. Get the vaccine up front, don't pet stray dogs, and you should have a good trip. Another good website for information about travel warnings is the State Department, U.S. Department of State, and their website is travel.state.gov. So that one you don't need a www, just travel.state.gov. And you can look down on the left-hand side, you'll see travel warnings and travel alerts. Now, travel warnings are more serious. They're telling you, don't even go to this country. We're pulling out all of our personnel. You will have no, you know, backup potentially as far as embassies and things like that. Don't go there. And that's usually because of political unrest where they cannot guarantee or even come close to helping you with the safety of your travel. Obviously, our government works with foreign governments, and if the foreign government is completely out to lunch, then there's nothing they can do. There's this kind of the second level is travel alerts. And those are more important because those are most of the places you're going to want to go to. And they're interesting. They will give you interesting little tidbits. I mean, even down to, you know, one certain neighborhood in a specific city has had a lot of muggings, and just avoid that neighborhood. So it's always good to check these travel alerts before you go. I mean, I find them fascinating. If you're a worrier, you may not want to check them at all because you're going to find out things that you didn't realize. But if you want to compare, maybe you should look in the section of the newspaper that, you know, there's usually a sheriff's blotter or the sheriff's notes in the local newspaper that talk about all the arrests and muggings and everything else in your neighborhood. If you check that, then I think you'd have a more realistic comparison that, hey, you know, you don't live in such a safe place either, but you don't worry about it on a day-to-day basis. It's just good to know because where we live, we all have neighborhoods, if you live in any kind of urban or suburban area, that you know are worse than others, more prone to crime, and you may subconsciously kind of avoid those. But with the travel alerts, that way now you're aware of where those places are in the countries you're going to. Okay, back to your health. People often ask me, well, what should I bring? What medicine should I bring so that I have kind of a first aid kit ready to go? Most countries, you're going to be able to get first aid kind of stuff. So you just want things that it's going to be a nuisance to run out to the pharmacy and get, like Band-Aids. But I like to carry things that are going to be likely to be used. You know, for example, one out of three travelers will get traveler's diarrhea. It's a lovely thought, but it's true. And if you go to places like India or the subcontinent of Africa, it's closer to 50%. In that case, what I like to bring is a little Imodium. So that, you know, there's a lot of people that say, hey, I like to let that stuff all flush out of my system. You know, the studies don't seem to necessarily bear that out. They did a study on Desert Storm the first time we went into Iraq, and they used Imodium to try and get the troops back into action faster, and they found no increased complication rate. So I think that's fine to go ahead and use Imodium if you get diarrhea to try and make your trip a little bit more pleasant. I also like to take a medicine called Zofran, which is an anti-nausea medicine, and it dissolves on your tongue, so it's pretty easy to administer, even if you're vomiting. That can really turn a trip around. I can tell you from experience, I've had family members, even myself, where it looked like this trip is going down the drain because you're there for four more days, and now you're puking your guts up. And this medicine will stop that oftentimes. And if you can stop the vomiting early, then you don't get into the cycle of being very dehydrated. This is something that's a prescription. You probably have to call your doctor and ask for a prescription. It's a pill. It's very expensive. They're between $25 and $40 a pill, depending on where you buy them. But just having two pills with you when you travel, I think, is a great benefit and could get you through. A lot of people ask about antibiotics. You know, the official recommendation is not to use antibiotics prophylactically, because you're more likely to get a resistant bacteria if you do get an infection. But there are some studies, just so you can be fully informed here, that show that taking Cipro daily, once a day, while you're traveling may reduce your chances of getting traveler's diarrhea. So a lot of people say, hey, if I have a 1 out of 3 chance of getting it, I want to take this medicine. Now, realizing there's complications to the medicine and there's the resistance issues, you know, that's something you can discuss with your own doctor. I personally do not take antibiotics when I travel, even to areas that are high risk for traveler's diarrhea. I do, however, take the medicine with me. So you could ask your doctor for a prescription to take with you in the event that you do get the diarrhea. What you're looking for, I don't want to get too graphic here, but what you're looking for is blood in the diarrhea. If you just have normal watery diarrhea, it's probably a virus. It's going to run its course. Or it may be food poisoning where you've actually eaten the toxin, not the bacteria. But when you see blood, that's a sign that you need to go ahead and start taking antibiotics. The other thing I carry with me is a couple pills of pain medicine. Again, that's just because it's inconvenient when you're in a lot of pain to go try and find help. Now, if you've got such a level of pain that you need narcotic pain relief and Tylenol or Motrin just isn't doing it, you really got to consider strongly seeking medical attention. But I'm just talking about having a few pills just in case you're in a lot of pain, and it's going to take a little while to get to any kind of assistance. I think that's reasonable. I think most doctors would write you a small prescription just to take with you. Now remember, the goal here is to stay healthy to begin with, so try and avoid high-risk behaviors. Here's a few that you may not think of. Number one, I know it's romantic and a great idea when you're walking through these open markets to buy all the local food and really experience the, quote, local experience. Well, you should be aware that part of the local experience is daily diarrhea, and a lot of the people that live in some of these more rural areas experience diarrhea and worms on a regular basis. So, you know, that's not something I would recommend. The rule you hear in travel circles is cook it, boil it, peel it, or avoid it. So I've seen some of these open markets where they realize, wow, I can sell more oranges if I peel the orange because these dainty Americans don't like to get their fingernails dirty by peeling an orange. Well, that's not good because now all their bacteria is on the surface of the orange you're about to eat. You know, an orange is a perfectly good snack to buy at an open market because you can peel that and the fruit inside should not be contaminated with any bacteria. Another very high-risk behavior is renting a moped. All right, if that's not a typical way for you to travel, number one, you're not really accustomed to how to maneuver through cars, through streets, and especially in a setting where people don't necessarily follow the traffic rules like you're accustomed to. Especially if you go to a third world country, look at the legs of some of the young men on the outside. They'll be very scarred up, and that's because they all drive mopeds and they've all been sideswiped by cars and have either had broken legs or severe injuries there. It's just one of the most common injuries I see when I work in clinics or hospitals in third world countries. So definitely avoid the moped. I know it's exciting and open air and all that, but it is definitely a high-risk behavior while you're traveling. Now, finally, what to do if you are sick or injured when you're traveling? The bottom line is you're going to have to look for a medical clinic and submit yourself to their healthcare. You don't have a lot of other options. A lot of people want an American clinic, an American doctor. You may be able to find that, but let's just think about that for a second. If you have an American doctor, what's he doing in a third world country? What happened to his license in the U.S.? You're not necessarily getting the best health care when you go to the, quote, American clinic in Zimbabwe. You need to go and find a reputable clinic that maybe some of the locals recommend. Some of the hotels may have a recommendation, or some of the hotels even have doctors that will come to see you. If you're more sick and you've been hospitalized, now it's time to start looking at how am I going to get home. This is where I think travel evacuation insurance is key. It is very inexpensive when you look at the overall cost of a trip. I bought it for my parents, and I believe for a 10-day trip, it covered them for a month, but they were on a 10-day trip, and it was about $100 for both of them. This is such cheap insurance. For scuba divers, the Divers Alert Network, or DAN, they have an evacuation component to it as well. You want to make sure you get that option. Purchasing this insurance is just a wise thing to do, because let me tell you, an evacuation, I run an air ambulance company, and an evacuation from Europe is about $150,000. One from just across the border in Mexico is going to be $15,000 to $30,000. So, and by the way, the plane will not leave the tarmac until the money is in the account, unless it's through an insurance company. So either you have to have a $150,000 limit on your credit card so you can give someone that credit card number and they'll leave, or there's no plane coming for you. You know, if you can afford a multi-thousand-dollar trip to Europe, it's worth the extra $100 to be covered for evacuation insurance. Two companies I can tell you that I like, SOS International and MedJet Assist. I'll let you look those up on your own, but those are two very reputable evacuation companies that do a very good job. I know because we provide service for them, and they've always done a very good job for their patients. What I love is, as arrogant Americans, once you enter the healthcare system in another country, you're often pleasantly surprised. They will take very good care of you in many situations, and the level of service you get is usually far above and beyond what you get in the United States as far as personal attention. So I would not worry too much about that aspect of it if you end up in a hospital. But of course, the goal is to try and get you home. And like I said, that is just going to be extremely difficult if you have not purchased evacuation insurance. All right, just to recap, make sure that you give yourself plenty of time before you travel, at least 6 weeks. Go see your doctor and look into immunizations. You can look up the immunizations on the CDC website and find out what you need. Many doctor's offices don't carry these vaccines. You could always go to your county health department, and most county health departments can get a hold of these things. Be sure to prepare by looking up the websites on the CDC and the Department of State to know what the dangers are where you're traveling. Be sure to bring any prescription medicines you already take, and those prescription medicines that we talked about, you can discuss with your doctor and maybe have on hand while you're abroad. And finally, if you're injured or hospitalized when you're abroad, if you've purchased a travel evacuation insurance, you'll have a number to contact that can help you out. A lot of times they can find a clinic or hospital for you locally until they can get you out. Then they can start making the arrangements to get you evacuated. That's it for today. Remember to subscribe and come back often to my website at www.jim.md. Take care.